All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, before we begin, I want to just thank everyone for the beautifully generous Hanukkah gift that I know many of you participated in. Thank you to Mrs. Haber for coordinating. And I will say it's a true highlight of my week to be able to come and learn Torah with all of you. The gift was absolutely unnecessary. Very much appreciated. The greatest gift, of course, is the Torah we get to learn together week in and week out. And we should be zochem merchem to do that for many years to come. So with that, let's begin. There is no shortage of incredible and riveting episodes to cover in these parshios, but I want to draw your attention to something what I think is really amazing. Remember again, Parshas Vayichi, the last parsha in Chumash Bereishis, and remember again, we have Yaakov Avinu in his final days, giving his last will and testament to his sons, right? The bulk of Parshas Vayichi is really focused on the brachos that Yaakov gives to his sons. Each brother, or I should say, each son, each child, receiving his own unique, particular type of bracha. But before all of that is the incredible exchange between Yaakov and Yosef. Vayi acharei advarim ha'ilu vayomer li Yosef, hine avicha chole. Vayikach eshnei banav imo es Menashe ves Ephraim. So word comes to Yosef, your father is ill. So Yosef quickly collects his sons, Menashe and Ephraim, and he goes to his father. Vayagi li Yaakov vayomer, hine bincha Yosef boilecha. Yaakov hears that Yosef is coming. He sits up out of honor, out of covet to the monarchy. Ultimately, Yaakov readies himself to see his son. And Yaakov Avinu ultimately says that what? He says, God appeared to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and told me that he's going to make me a great and vast nation. Going to appear, make me a great and vast nation. What happens? V'ata. Now Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, V'ata shnei v'necha anoladim locha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo'i eilecha Mitzrayim alihem, Ephraim u'minashe, Keruvein v'shimon yihiyu li. So perhaps one of the most dramatic revelations of this entire story. So Yaakov says to Yosef, your two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, are going to be like Reuven and Shimon. Which, what's happening over here? What's happening here? What's happening to Menashe and Ephraim? They're becoming Shvatim. What else is happening over here in terms of Yosef? What is Yosef receiving? A double portion. Yosef is essentially being recognized as the Bechor. He is being recognized as the firstborn because he is the firstborn. He is the firstborn of Rachel Imenu, Yaakov Avinu's intended or desired wife. So it is here in this moment, in Yaakov Avinu. So what's amazing, by the way, about this is like the bookends of Yaakov Avinu's life. You know, when we're introduced, not Yaakov Avinu, but when the family begins, we see Yaakov's favoritism towards Yosef. And we always wonder, like, what is that, where does that favoritism stem from? What is that the result of? Yosef was not, okay, you could say, so many of them are partially understand because Yosef was the baby in the family, right? He was the Ben Zakunim. What's the problem with that? Binyamin. There's Binyamin. There was a younger child, and yet Binyamin never really seems to get preferential treatment over the other children. And now we begin to see, what was it about Yosef that ultimately, again, made Yaakov give him this preferential treatment? Was that he was the firstborn of Rachel Imenu. He was the firstborn of Yaakov Avinu's intended chosen wife. Remember again, Leah Imenu was a great tzadikess, but in an incredibly tragic turn of events, most tragic for her, she was not the desired wife of Yaakov. She knew it, Yaakov knew it, even crazier, the children knew it, which by the way is an incredible lesson in parenting, that parents think that they shield their, the kids don't know what's going on. The kids always know what's going on. And the kids often know what's going on even before you know what's fully going on. The children pick up, so again, you see this in the Shvatim, there's incredible, again, strife and animosity amongst the children because there's a feeling amongst the children of Leah that their mother is a second-class citizen. And the truth is, to a certain degree, she was. Not because Yaakov Avinu treated her, Chas v'Shalom, that way, but because it was clear to everyone, he never wanted to marry her. What do you do in a marriage where you were tricked into it? What do you do in a marriage where it was never your intention to do so? She, of course, has a dramatic place, an important place, but at the end of the day, there was this constant tension. This was not a good, happy, and harmonious home. Yeah.
And yet, the kahuna...
So that's a different discussion, correct? That's a different... So amazingly enough, the most powerful shvatim are the children of Leah Imenu, which are 1,000%. So obviously, this marriage was supposed to happen. The Rebbe Shlomo needed the union to occur. On a Klal Yisrael level, 100%. On the interpersonal level, this was a very strained relationship. It always was. You even see the way that the women themselves, right? Remember the whole episode with the Dudaim, right? Rachel wanted some of the flowers of Rivka. Some of the flowers of Leah. Leah said, fine, I'll give you the flowers, but he's going to spend the night with me. Like, what are we talking? Like, what is happening over here? But again, what do you see? You see a story of two women fighting over the attention of the same man. Leah Imenu just wants to be loved. Leah Imenu wants something that every single wife wants, which is to feel like the center of her husband's universe, right? To ultimately feel that she's important, to feel that she matters. Leah Imenu doesn't get that in full measure, in large part, because she wasn't the chosen wife. She wasn't the center of Yaakov Avinu's universe. So again, now we begin to see that what happens, Yaakov Avinu, one of his final acts, says to Yosef, you're the Bechar. You're the Bechar. Now again, what happens with Reuven is a different discussion, but you're the Bechar. And the proof to that is, remember again, there is no Shevet Yosef, but rather again, there's Menashe and Ephraim. One Shevet becomes two. That's the Pishnayim, the double portion that is normally given to the firstborn, that's given to Yosef. But Yaakov Avinu says, just understand, if you have any more kids, those children will be absorbed into the tribes of Menashe and Ephraim, they will not become additional tribes. Fine. But here's the verse we're going to focus on. V'ani, bivoi mi padan, meisa alai Rachel be'eretz kinan, be'ovd kivras aretz, lavo efrasa, vek bere ha'sham be'derech efrat, hi beis lochem. So then Yaakov Avinu says something amazing. And by the way, when I was coming back from Padan Aram, right, for coming back from Eretz Yisrael, from Lavan, back into Eretz Yisrael, Rachel, your mother, died on the way, and I buried her there on the side of the road by Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. And the question that all of the commentaries jump on is, what is this doing here? Remember again, that's why I gave you all of the psukim, so you could see the flow. The flow of the psukim is, Yaakov Avinu is dying. He's dying. That doesn't mean he has the sniffles. He's dying. Right? He's dying. He calls in Yosef, this is my last will and testament, your two sons are going to become tribes, and by the way, your mother died, you were a young boy, but your mother died when you came back to Eretz Yisrael. I did not take her to Marasa Machpelah, to Hebron. Instead, I buried her on the side of the road. Baderach Ephrat, hi beis lachem. So the question we're going to explore tonight is, why is Yaakov Avinu bringing this up? What does this have to do with the narrative? What does this have to do with the story? We know the story of Rachel Imenu's death. Yosef knows the story of his mother's death. Yosef knows. Remember again, you know, today when you go to Kever Rachel, so remember again, it looks like a fortress. But before it looked like a fortress, so again, it is in the middle of nowhere. It really is, meaning if you look at the older paintings or pictures of Kever Rachel, right, there was a stone structure, and what was next to it? Right? Trees. Right? Trees, a dirt road, fields. There's nothing there. It literally is, even though, again, interested geographically, it's not so far from Hebron, but where Rachel Imenu herself is buried is literally the middle of nowhere. So the question is, why is Yaakov Avinu bringing up this point now? So I want to share with you tonight, really, two approaches. If you take a look at number two, so the Aznaim LaTorah, Rav Sarotskin writes something so beautiful. He says, "Vek bara sham bederach Ephrat, hi beis lachem, bepashtos amrle, shesiru amokom kvurasimo, shema shachach mirov yamim, viachare misas Yaakov, lo yiye esmi lishol." So this is amazing. So Rav Sarotskin says that Yaakov was nervous that maybe Yosef forgot where his mother was buried. Remember again, His mother passed away when he was a young boy. He's been missing, quote unquote, for 22 years. They're not going back to Eretz Canaan anytime soon. Yaakov Avinu has been the keeper of the grave. Yaakov Avinu has been the one who's ultimately, again, had been vigilant about the site of Rachel Imenu's burial. He's about to die. So he wants to make sure, says Rav Saratzkin, that Yosef remembers where his mother is buried. He wants to make sure that Yosef remembers, ultimately, again, where the kever of Rachel Imenu is. Listen to these words. Because Yaakov knew that the sons of Leah and the sons of the maidservants were not going to kever Rachel. Why were they not going to kever Rachel? Why should they? Why should they? Right? Remember, what point would that? They'll go to Hebron, right? They'll go to the kever of Leah Imenu. They're not going to kever Rachel. Ubinyamin lo hikir esimo. Listen to this. What about Binyamin? So Shasukhan says something amazing. Binyamin never knew his mother. Why did he never know his mother? Because she died in childbirth. So remember again, amazingly enough, Yaakov Avinu, this is dramatically amazing, Yaakov Avinu is about to die. And what is he most concerned about? That the memory of his beloved Rachel is going to die with him. Because with me, Rachel is forgotten. Binyamin never knew his mother. It didn't mean he didn't have a love for her. A child always has an innate love for his mother, for her mother, but he didn't know her. The other children, no connection to Rachel Imenu. And therefore Yaakov Avinu says in part of his departure speech to Yosef, I'm going to die, please don't forget your mother. She's buried on the way to Beit Lechem, she's buried on the way to Ephrat, please don't forget her. An incredibly dramatic exchange. Rav Hirsch expounds on this a little bit. Look at number three. He says, this speech of Jacob, referring back to Rachel's death and burial, is usually taken as having been set in exoneration for his placing such weight on being buried in Machpelah. So here Rav Hirsch says something, which we're going to get into this in a few moments. So skip a little bit towards the end. In this conversation, towards the end of the first page, in this conversation, to the moment when he gives his blessing, and then plans to impart to his grandson their position in the future of the nation, Jacob is designated solely as Jacob, not as Israel. When Joseph came in to Vayischazek Israel, so again, even if you skip a little bit, I'm sorry, skip down just a few lines. The last two words on the line are for it. It's on the second page too, for six lines in, right towards the end of the line. For it seems that his favoritism to the sons of Joseph came, not from national considerations, but from the individual personal feelings, which Jacob, as Jacob the man, personally felt. Rav Hirsch makes an amazing observation. Yaakov Avinu is known by two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Now, what's interesting to note is as follows. Those names are used at different times in the Chumash. Excuse me. When the Torah relates a story, my sound's not coming through. Okay, that is a dedicated shir listener. Okay, I don't know what to do. Okay, it'll be posted in Mirat Hashem right after. Thank you. I think I did what I was supposed to do. Okay, I'm afraid to touch it. All right, we'll post it afterwards. So what Rav Hirsch makes is the following observation. Rav Hirsch says, Yaakov is known by two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov and Yisrael. So what he points out is something absolutely amazing, which is Yaakov is the name when we're talking about the individual. Yisrael is the name that is used for when? Something national. What Rav Hirsch points out over here is something dramatically amazing, which is the name that is used in this story is Yaakov. Is Yaakov Avinu. Now this is amazing because remember, what's happening over here? Yaakov is saying to Yosef, your two sons are going to become Shvatim. Your two sons are not going to become tribes. We would think that what is that? That's a national consideration. Yet again, the name Yisrael is not used. The name Yaakov is used. To which Rav Hirsch says something dramatically amazing. The making of Ephraim and Menashe into tribes was not a national consideration, but rather it was a personal consideration. This was not Yisrael who decided to give Yosef a double portion, but rather, again, it was the individual Yaakov. Why? Watch this. In the last days of his life, thoughts of the wife whom he loved the most deeply, who was the actual wife of his choice, and who had been taken away from him the earliest, were especially prominent in his mind. Her whole fate made it likely that her memory would be more in the background in the future memorials of the nations. When the children of Israel in later times visited the graves of their ancestors, they would find Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. But Rachel, Joseph's mother, was not granted even in death to receive her place in the common resting place of the ancestors of the nation. And only two tribes call her their mother. So it would be just the wife of his heart, whom he had thought of as the real mother of his future people, who might vanish from the hearts of the nation. That is why it was the deep desire of his heart to raise Joseph, Rachel's firstborn, to be the firstborn of his national tribes, by making his son into two tribes, to grant him the right of the firstborn to a double portion. So this is a dramatically moving insight. Yaakov Avinu is consumed with the reality that when he dies, the memory of Rachel Imenu dies with him. Who's going to remember her? Binyamin never knew his mother. And Yaakov even has his doubts about Yosef. Will Yosef remember his mother or not? Meaning at the end of the day, Yosef has been gone for over 22 years, 25 years, over two decades. And even before that, he was a young boy when his mother passed away. Plus, Yosef, is not going back to Canaan. The only time Yosef is going back to Canaan is when he's dead for burial. Right, for burial, he already recognizes this, that he's not going back alive, ultimately, to Canaan. So Hirsch says, in these final moments of Yaakov Avinu's life, he is consumed with perpetuating Rachel Imenu's legacy and her memory. So what does he do? He says, Yosef, I'm making your sons into two tribes. So at least now, there are two tribes, not really three tribes, because Binyamin is there also. There are three tribes, three out of the 12, ultimately, again, who go ahead and claim Rachel as their matriarch. Three out of the 12 who call Rachel Mama Rachel. Perhaps now there is a better possibility that ultimately, again, Rachel Imenu's memory and legacy will be remembered. And now we understand what happens here. So that's why Yaakov Avinu, now if you go back to number one, it all fits together. At the end of making Menashe and Ephraim into tribes, what does Yaakov Avinu say? Yaakov says, by the way, when I was coming back from Eretz, from Padan Aram, when I was coming back. So what happened? Rachel died in the middle of nowhere. And I buried her in the middle of nowhere. Yaakov Avinu, with this statement about his beloved Rachel, is explaining to Yosef why he did what he just did. Because remember, understand, if you think about this for just a moment, it would appear so illogical that Yaakov Avinu would do such a thing like this. Why, right? Why does this seem illogical? Yaakov Avinu's family got into trouble. Why? Why? Because of favoritism, right? Because of singling out one child. So now you're going to single out that same kid. You're going to single out Yosef again. Not only that, but you're going to make his two sons into their own tribes. To which Yaakov Avinu says, this is not favoritism. This is about ensuring the continuity of the memory of Rachel Imenu. But isn't it powerful? Rachel Imenu passed away how long before? Right? At least three decades earlier. And in Yaakov Avinu's final days, what is he consumed with? He's consumed by the memory of his beloved wife. When he dies, he's not worried about being forgotten, right? It's an incredible thing, isn't it? That at the end of the day, the one thing we never want is to be forgotten. It's an incredible idea. That's why man deep down yearns for immortality. Because what's our greatest existential fear? Is being forgotten. Rav Hirsch points out in one of his other essays that the reason people have a desire to have children is because children assure you some small measure of immortality. What does that mean? Because the hope, the hope is that the children will outlive the parents, so that even when I'm gone, my children will still be here. Which means there's a piece of me that lives on even when my life is over. Yaakov Avinu knows that his legacy and his memory is secure. What he doesn't know is what's going to happen with Rachel. So what does he do? Takes Yosef's two sons, the firstborn of Rachel, makes them into tribes. Now between Yosef, Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin, Yaakov feels confident leaving this world knowing that he has safeguarded and secured the memory of his beloved Rachel. Such an incredibly and moving exchange. What we always thought was a symbol of love between father and son, in fact, is an incredible display of love between husband and his long-gone wife. Incredibly moving. But I'll share with you another approach. Take a look at number four. So Rashi... Yes.
Like you said, unplug the lapel mic from the iPhone.
Excellent. Thank you. Tamash, yes, say thank you. And enjoy his vacation. Right? So take a look at number four. So remember, so Rashi says over here in the Pasuk as follows. Rashi explains, Va'ani bevoimi padan. So Rashi, remember, Rashi's also bothered by this idea. Why is Yaakov Avinu bringing up the death of Rachel Imenu now? Why is that here? So he says something amazing. Va'ani bevoimi padan. So Rashi says something amazing. Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I know you feel I'm being inconsistent. Why? Because remember again, in the section before, number one, I didn't put on your shibboleth, in the section right before, Yaakov is having another conversation in Yosef. And what happens in that conversation? Yaakov says to Yosef, when I die, I ask you to please take my remains to Eretz Kinan. So then what happens? According to Rashi, then Yaakov comes back and he says to Yosef, look at number four, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines in. Vekbera sham velohi lichasa afila beis lechem. Viadati sheyesh belibcha alai taromes. So this is amazing. Yaakov says to Yosef, I finished giving you all these instructions about my burial. I told you, you have to take my remains to Canaan, which, by the way, understand, that's a big deal. That's a big deal to have to transport the remains of Yaakov Avinu from Mitzrayim to Canaan to go. Remember again, as you know, this is the interesting part about the Jew in the diaspora. As much as Yosef occupies a position of power, it's not autonomous power. Right? He is still subservient to a Gentile ruler. What is going to happen ultimately, again, when Yosef says, I have to take my father to bury him in Israel? It's not so pashut what's going to happen. The Medrash has this incredible tension that occurs. But Yaakov says, it's very important to me, I need you to do that. So according to Rashi, what happens over here is that Yaakov says to Yosef, and I know that you're bregis with me. I know you're angry with me. Why are you angry? Or I should say, better stated, I know sheyesh belipcha like taromes. I know that inside, you have negative feelings towards me. Why do you have negative feelings towards me? Because you're thinking to yourself, a chutzpah. You're asking me to transport your remains to Canaan. And when mother died, you buried her in the middle of nowhere? You remember it? Right? If you've been to Beis Lechem, you know how far is Beis Lechem from Hebron? It's a couple of kilometers. Okay, obviously it's much faster today, but it's not that far away. It's not that far away. You could have buried her ultimately again in Hebron. You could have taken her to Maaseh Machpelah. You mamish buried my mother in the middle of nowhere. You buried her in the middle of nowhere and you are right there. And now you have the chutzpah to ask me to transport your remains from Egypt ultimately again to Eretz Canaan, to Maaseh Machpelah. Now, by the way, so that according to Rashi, that's what's unfolding over here. So Yaakov is having this dialogue with Yosef. Part one of the dialogue is bury me in Eretz Canaan. Part two of the dialogue is Ephraim and Menashe are going to become like tribes. Then what happens? Yaakov circles back to part one of the dialogue. Remember when we were speaking about that I asked you to bury me in Canaan? I know that you're upset with me. I know that you're bregis with me because you're wondering how could it be that I have such insistence on being buried in Maaseh Machpelah, in Hebron, and yet I didn't even have the decency to bury your mother in our ancestral burial plot, but instead I buried her on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. So according to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu explains that what looks like the middle of nowhere now is going to become the middle of somewhere later on. When later on? So Rashi points out that when the Jews are led out of Eretz Yisrael after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the route that the Babylonians took us out on went right past Kever Rachel. Went right past the burial place of Kever Rachel. And what happens? Rashi says in the last two lines of number two, Yotz Rachel al Kivra uboche umivakeshes aleihem rachamim. And it is then as we are being led out to exile that Rachel Yemenu comes out, she rises up, and she comes out and she cries for her children. And she supplicates before God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shene'emar kol b'rama nishma, Rachel mevaka al baneha. Rachel Yemenu looks like she's in the middle of nowhere now. But she's exactly where she needs to be in the most important moment. When we are being led out to diaspora, when the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, life as we know it is being turned upside down, we are led right by the grave of Rachel Imenu, and Rachel Imenu herself comes out, davens for us, supplicates for us, beseeches HaKadosh Baruch Hu to please have compassion upon us. Kobra, and what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meshiva, Yesh schar lefula seich ne'um Hashem, v'shavu banim legvulam. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rachel, mini kolich mibechi, ve'inayich min dima, don't cry, right? Dry your tears, I promise you, I will bring back your children. An incredibly magnificent and overwhelming image. What looks like the middle of nowhere now is going to be a very significant somewhere in generations from now. So Yaakov says to Yosef, I buried your mother exactly where she needs to be. The truth is, the Mefarshim in general asked this question back when Rachel Yemenu died. Why doesn't Yaakov Avinu take her to Maras HaMachpelah? So Rashi gives his approach. The Ramban, by the way, says in a very different approach. The Ramban says in a very dramatic approach. He said Rachel Yemenu died in the middle of childbirth. There was an incredible amount of blood. So he says to take her body to Maras HaMachpelah would have been a bizayon, would have been a degradation to the dead. And therefore, again, Yaakov Avinu felt the best way to keep her dignity intact was to bury her right there. So the Mefarsh, and there are many, many different interpretations. This Rashi, perhaps, is the most well-known. But I'll tell you what's most striking about this Rashi. What's most striking about this Rashi, again, go back, so in number four for just a moment, go back, one, two, three, four lines up from the end of number four. Four lines up from the end of number four. So look what Rashi says. So Vekberasham, Yaakov says, I buried your mother in the middle of nowhere. V'lo holichtiha afilu lebeis lechem lachnisa laaretz. And I didn't even take her to Beis Lechem. See, at least Beis Lechem was a city. At least Beis Lechem was a city. I didn't even take her into the city, right? I literally buried her in the middle of nowhere. V'yadati, look at this next phrase. V'yadati, sheyesh belibcha alay taromes. What does that mean? V'yadati, sheyesh belibcha alay taromes. How would you translate that? And I know that in your heart, you feel complaints against me. Do you know sometimes the most antagonistic thing that a person can say to you is? I know how you're feeling. Oh, I know what you're thinking. No, right? You don't know what I'm thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. You don't know how I'm feeling. Hey, and what's amazing over here is as follows. Yaakov Avinu constructs this entire narrative. This entire narrative. I know that you're upset with me. Has Yosef said anything?
No.
Has Yosef even hinted at anything?
No.
Nothing. Nothing. Yosef, again, is with his father. Yosef, you know, was talking to us about other things, but at the end of the day, Yosef has never made any mention of this burial of his mother. Yet Yaakov says, the wording is so incredible, V'yadati, I know, sheyesh belibcha alay taromes. I know that you're upset. I know that you have complaints against me. Really? Really? Where in the Psukim? Where do you ever find any level? Remember again, we already know that Rachel Yemenu was buried in the middle of nowhere. We've already known it for Parshios. We've never heard anything about this before. Right? It was never mentioned to Yosef when he was living at home. It was never mentioned in reunification. Yosef never brought this up. When Yaakov asked to be buried in Canaan, it's not like Yosef, well, Dad, we'll have to see what happens. I'll try my best. Nothing. Yosef doesn't say anything. And that silence is acquiescence. Whatever you want is what I'll do. Yet, again, Yaakov Avinu says this statement, V'yadati, I know, sheyesh belibcha taromes, I know that you're upset. So what's happening here? So I want to show you something amazing. Skip a little bit to number 6. So the Sichos Musar, Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, says something absolutely amazing. See, he writes in 6a, he says, V'yesh les bonen bazeh, b'shar sheba Yaakov lefayis es Yosef bino, shelo yihye belibo alav, lama hutzrach lechol hakdamas halalu. So, Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz asked the question a little bit differently. He says, you know, Yaakov gives this whole introduction. Let me explain to you why I buried your mother in the middle of nowhere. It's not really the middle of nowhere. It's the middle of somewhere. And all of these explanations are predicated on what? And Yaakov Avinu saying, I know that you're upset with me. I know you're upset with me, so I'm going to explain my actions. So Rechaim Shalavit says, I don't understand. Why do you need this whole introduction? V'chilo daishi yomer lo, api adibor, hayal ala dash adan ye Yosef choshet shemachmas, hagishomim nimna Yaakov mila alicha lebeis lachem. So Rechaim Shalavit says, what's going on over here? Why does Yaakov Avinu feel the need to explain himself? So he's asking the question on two levels. Number one, Yaakov Avinu's entire explanation seems to be predicated on the thought that Yosef is upset. Where do you see that Yosef is upset? Where do you find any inkling that Yosef may be upset? That's number one. Number two, even if Yosef is upset, does Yosef think that his father did something without the most holy of intentions? Does Yosef think that what? His father got lazy, that's why he buried his beloved wife on the side of the road? Or because the weather was inclement, therefore he couldn't make the trip? Or why would Yosef think that his father had anything less than the purest of intentions? And the Sichos Musar says something absolutely amazing. Paragraph B. Ela ha'inyan kachu. E masai nitan lishmoas devar Hashem. Rak b'sha'a shemena'arim es kal ha'efer, or ha'afar, ha'davok misaviv. I'm going to read two lines, then I'll explain. Rak az miskala devar Hashem kefishu. Kol zman shematsui pirut kolshu ma'avak ha'tavayim b'makom. Ein devar Hashem yachol yishama. V'rak la'achar shesila Yaakov kol negiyah v'siba tivis be'inyin. Eis kira yisa bo kivras arz levay frasa. Az yachol ha'yol yishama devar Hashem. Listen to this. Says Rav Chaim Shalavit something absolutely amazing. Yaakov Avinu said, do you know how much pain we experienced as a family? Why? If you have to explain why Yaakov Avinu's family was so fractured and experienced so much pain, it was why? Why?
Because Yosef was not around.
That was the result. But why was there so much pain and difficulty? For the same reason, there's a lot of pain and difficulty in many families. Because people refuse to speak about the real issues. Because at the end of the day, there are real problems that no one wants to talk about. We'll do anything and everything but confront. You see, at the end of the day, the brothers, their animosity towards Yosef was much more deep-rooted. Much more deep-rooted. This went back again, as we mentioned before, to the rivalry between Rachel and Leah. To children feeling that they don't have the full measure of their father's love. Did Yaakov love all of his children? Of course. Did he love all of them equally? I have something to tell you. No parent loves their children equally. Now, this is a very important point to finesse here. What does that mean? Every child is different, which means every child has a different relationship with the parent, which means my love for every child is different. It's not more, it's not less. The volume of love may be the same. The nature of that love, the shape of that love, the form of that love is dramatically different from child. Any parent who tells you that they love their children the same either is a very bad parent or is lying, right? It's not true. It's not true. Every child is different. There's a world to themselves. This child needs a little bit more coddling. This child needs a little bit more positive reinforcement. This child needs a little bit more tough love. This child is a self-starter. This child needs chizuk. We know this. Every child needs something different. And a good parent knows how to give the right kind of love to each individual child. Yaakov Avinu loves all of his children, but he also recognized that different children required different things. Yosef didn't have a mother. Yosef didn't have a mother. And so Yaakov Avinu had to be the mother and the father for this child. Why does he get in the coat? Because he wants to make the other brothers jealous. Because the Shvatim are walking around without a winter coat, right? They're going out of the house without coats. Everybody has what they need. He needs a little extra something. He doesn't have a mother. So I have to be a father and a mother to him. The rest of you, you're adults, Baruch Hashem. You're older. You have your mothers. This boy doesn't have his mother. So I'm going to give him something a little bit different. But what happened? No one ever spoke about it. No one ever dealt with it. The Shvatim never, can you imagine how wonderful it would have been for Yaakov Avinu's sons to have a therapy session? Dad, you know, why don't you love us like you love Yosef? Right, Yaakov's my sons. And Yaakov, what would have happened? Yaakov would have started crying. Right? And he would say, I'm so sorry that I made you feel that way. I love you all the same. But let me explain to you. Yosef needs something different. Binyamin needs something different. Yehuda needs something different. And I try to be the best father I can be and give all of my children exactly what we need. I so terribly apologize to you. If I made you feel less loved with the quote-unquote extra attention I was giving Yosef, these problems could have been solved. These issues could have been dealt with. These crises could have been averted. But when you don't talk about the issues, when you refuse to confront the challenges, and all you do is circle around and around and around and do anything and everything but talk about what the real issues are, what happens, it's a powder keg. And it's only a matter of time until the situation explodes. If you look at the story of Yosef and his brothers, it is such an unimaginable story, right? The brothers are out shepherding their flock, and what happens? They see Yosef. These are adult men. They see Yosef. And what happens when they see Yosef? What do they say? The first reaction, what do they say? Let's kill him. Let's kill him. Right, here's the dreamer, let's kill him. What? What? Where did that come from? Because you see what happens is when you have pent up anger and anxiety and aggression, and you're not properly dealing with it, at some point in time, the dam bursts and everything comes out in an unhealthy emotional volcano. In that moment, when they saw Yosef in the field all alone, and they saw him wearing his nice coat that his father got him, they felt like there was a dagger in their heart. Our father doesn't love us as much. Of course he does. Just no one's talking about it. No one's having a conversation about it. No one's addressing it. So it says in Chaim Shmulev, it's something dramatically amazing. Yaakov Avinu says, I made mistakes in the past. I am not going to repeat the same mistakes. Yosef, let's put it on the table. Did Yosef say anything to his father? Did he say anything? No, and it's quite possible, by the way, that Yosef did not find anything negative in what his father said. But Yaakov Avinu said, I lived through 22 years of Gehenna. I lived through 22 years of Shiva because we as a family did not discuss the things which were simmering in our hearts and simmering in our souls. And you know what? With my last breaths, I'm going to experience a paradigm shift. We're not going to live like this anymore. So I know I asked you to bury me in Canaan. And I know maybe you're thinking to yourself, a chutzpah, you're asking me to do this and I didn't do it for your mother. And probably when Yaakov Avinu said this, what did Yosef say? Tati, Abba, Daddy, whatever. Chas v'shalom. Of course, I would never think that about you. That's fine. But let's just talk it out. Because should those thoughts ever creep into your mind and creep into your heart and creep into your soul, I want to be proactive in explaining it to you. I want to be proactive in confronting the potential issues. I want to put everything on the table so that there's no volcanic emotional eruption sometime later on when I cannot do the damage control. Says Chaim Shmulevitz, that is the mussar. What's unfolding over here is Yaakov Avinu saying, when you have a problem in your family, you got to deal with it. You have to confront it. You have to engage. Well, it's not just the family. It's any time you have some type of great life issue. You have to find the courage to confront. We love avoidance. When I say we love, I mean like mankind. We love avoidance, right? I love not to tackle an issue. And by the way, no one ever says I'm avoiding. In general, we just have incredible other excuses. Like, it's just not the right time to deal with this. When is the right time? No, but I know it's not today, and it's not tomorrow, and it's not for the foreseeable future. Right? At some point in the future, it'll be the right time. Whenever the right time is, just, I know for sure it's not now. And you know what happens when you don't deal with your life issues? They don't go away. They don't go away. They only become worse. They only become amplified. They only become greater to the point where then when they erupt, you cannot control the emotional lava. Right? When it erupts then, it's lost. It's done. When it erupts, that's when brother turns against brother, strips brother of his clothing and of his dignity, and sells him off like a piece of property to be lost for 22 years. Your father is ruined. The family is sent into a chaotic descent of emotional turbulence. That's what happens when you don't confront, engage, and deal with your life issues. And so Yaakov Avinu, in his final breath, says, no more. No more. Maybe this is part of the courage when you know that of getting older, you have a greater willingness to confront things. You know, certain chutzpah comes with old age as well, which is an incredible bracha. You have the courage to confront things. You don't have to worry about hurting people's feelings as much. Let's just talk it out. Let's just discuss it. And so Yaakov Avinu puts it all on the table. That's as Rechem Shmulevitz is what's unfolding. And I'll show you something amazing. Because then what happens at the end of the parsha? Yaakov Avinu dies. They take Yaakov for burial in Canaan. When they come back from Canaan, so the Torah says, number 7, Vayiru ache Yosef kimes avihem. Right? So the brothers of Yosef saw that their father died, and the Torah relates that they now become very scared that Yosef is going to take revenge. And so it's not clear if they're making up a story or if Yaakov Avinu really said this to them, but they essentially say to Yosef, our father said before he died, even though your brothers hurt you, forgive them. That's the message they give Yosef in the name of Yaakov. So what happens? Yosef begins to cry. Look at number 8. Vayomer lehem Yosef. So Yosef says to his brothers, Al tiro, do not be afraid of me. Ki atachas elokim ani, because am I instead of God? Kosh Baruch Hu had a plan. I'm a part of the plan. I'm not going to hurt you. But watch this. Vahatem chashavtem alai ra'a. Elokim chashav letova. You tried to harm me, right? You intended evil against me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind for good. Leman aso kayom azeh lachios am rav. Right, in order to bring about what is at present, to keep a great nation. So I want to show you something amazing. Yosef's word choice is amazing. Atem chashavtem alai ra. You had evil intentions. You tried to hurt me, to harm me, to do bad to me, and God made it turn out good. Contrast this with what Yosef says to his brothers in last week's parsha, Parshas Vayigash, when he reveals his identity. Look at number 9, last source. Vayomer Yosef el Achav, Gishuna, Yosef Avinu says, come close to me. He says, I am Yosef that you sent me down to Egypt. And what does he say to them? Va'ata, al te'atzvu, do not be sad. Va'al yichar be'enechem, don't let it trouble you. Ki mechartem osein, that you sold me here. Why? Ki lemichya shalachani elokim lefnechem. God sent me to sustain all of you, because there's going to be another 2 years of famine. Vayishlachini elokim lefnechem. God sent me before you. Again, atalo atem shalachtem osein. You didn't send me. Elokim, God sent me. Fine. So Yosef tells his brothers, don't be sad. Don't be worried. Don't be upset. You didn't sell me. God sent me. What doesn't Yosef say during the revelation? What didn't he say? That he said in number 8, after his father dies, that you wanted to hurt me. In number 8, after Yaakov Avinu dies, Yosef says something amazing. Va'atem chashavtem alai ra'a. You know you wanted to hurt me. You know you wanted to do evil to me. It's interesting that when Yosef revealed his identity to his brother in last week's parasha, he never says anything like that. Instead, and just the opposite, it appears that what is Yosef trying to do in last week's parasha, during the revelation, what is he doing? He's trying to almost appease, right? He's trying to absolve them of guilt. Lo atem mechartem osi. It's not you. It's not you. Really? It wasn't you? It was God. You didn't sell me. God sent me. This was hashgacha pratis. No mention of any brother culpability. And in this week's parsha, after the death of Yaakov, Yosef says, Atem chashavtem alai ra. You tried to hurt me. You tried to do bad things to me. But it's okay. Elokim chashav letova. What's happening over here? Yosef HaTzadik is learning from his father. And he says, my dear brothers, If we are ever again going to have a normal relationship, we have to put everything on the table. And let's talk about what happened. I know in last week's parasha, I told you guys, don't worry about it, right? Just between brothers, we'll chalk it up to some brother roughhousing, right? You threw me in a pit, you sold me like a piece of property, I went to the Egyptians, you left me for dead, don't worry about it, right? It wasn't a big deal, God had a plan. In this week's parasha, Yosef says, by the way, it was a big deal. It was a really big deal. You hurt me. You harmed me. You robbed me of my youth. You took me away from my father. You robbed me of my innocence. You made me feel like a nothing. You put me in a place where I was subjected to the whims and advances of Ashes Potiphar. I spent years in a deep, dark Egyptian prison. You think that doesn't leave me with scars? You know, we often think, oh, Yosef's happy-go-lucky, everything's fine. Really? You think he doesn't have scars from his past? You think he doesn't have difficulties from the trauma of being sold? None of us know what it means to be thrown into a pit by your own flesh and blood and to be sold off like a piece of property. Atem chashavtem alai ra. You guys did really, really bad stuff to me. It's okay. I'm not angry. I love you. I'm going to take care of you because it's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. But if we're going to heal, then we have to be honest. If we're going to heal, then we have to have open dialogue. If we're going to heal, then we need to put everything on the table. You see, what's amazing is in last week's parasha, Yosef thought that the path to interpersonal reconciliation was paved in whitewash, right? Was paved ultimately again in pretending like, it's okay, everything is great, everything is perfect. You see, everyone lived happily ever after. Worked out fantastic for all of us. Everybody's happy. That's what he thought. And again, you can understand sometimes the only way to move on in relationships is to let go of the pain and the trauma. That's what Yosef was doing. But now that father is gone, and remember again, you find this happening very often in families, where families are very often able to keep a closeness when a parent is alive. The parent is the glue. And then when the parent dies, very often again, siblings kind of end up going their own way. Yaakov is dead. Yaakov has died. And Yosef says to his brothers, I want a relationship with you. Despite everything you did to me, I want you in my life. But if we're going to have a relationship, we have to be honest about what happened. We have to put it on the table, because otherwise, you know what's going to happen if we're not honest? Stuff is going to simmer in my heart, and stuff is going to simmer in your heart. Because remember again, the brothers, as happy as they were here, happy to hear Yosef's pious interpretation of events, you guys didn't sell me, God sent me. They didn't believe it. The brothers didn't believe it. He can't have forgiven us. He can't have just forgotten about the past. It can't just be, let's let bygones be bygones and move on. He's got to be. That's why they make up this story that Yaakov commanded before he died that you should forgive us. Yosef says, if we're going to have a relationship, let's be honest. If we're going to have a relationship, let's talk things out. If we're going to have a relationship, then let's put everything on the table. And I think the message here becomes self-evident in our own lives. This is an incredible message, whether it's dealing with family members, whether it's issues of shalom bayis in a marriage, whether it's dealing with friendships, with children, with friends, whoever it may be. Every relationship at some point in life encounters turbulence and sometimes even trauma. And people sometimes think that the best way to move forward is just pretend like everything is okay. Now, sometimes that's true. Sometimes you just have to let go and move forward. But more often than not, in order to move forward, you have to first be honest and put everything on the table. You can't allow the emotions to build up inside of you because it will explode. And when it does, it often does so in the most unhealthy of ways. Yaakov Avinu teaches us that the best way to heal fractured relationships is open and honest dialogue. Tell me how you're feeling. I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling. And together we'll work through all of this. This was the model of Yaakov Avinu. Again, if only this family would have understood these techniques 22 years earlier. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a plan. But how different Yaakov's life could have been. How different Yosef's life could have been. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his plan. But Yosef, again, the always attentive son understands what his father did, brings that to his relationship with his brothers, and from learning this, may we be zocha mirtz Hashem to bring this same type of emotional strength, fortitude, and honesty to our life relationships as well. Thank you.